Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
We're the fourth winningest franchise in the league since 2000. All right, that means in the upper quartile of winners, we're in the top quartile of that upper quartile. That's rare air.
Hello and welcome back to the Upper Quartile Podcast. I am your host, Jim Aiello, and I am joined, as always, by the Indianapolis Colts beat writer for The Athletic, James Boyd. James, big plan for today was to talk about your mock draft, which came out this morning. Good stuff, and we will definitely get into the mock draft and you're putting on the Ballard hat and trading back a bunch of times. I think fans are going to be really interested to talk about that. But we also had some breaking news this morning that we're going to go into first before we get to that mock is the DeForest Buckner contract extension, which I don't know if we talked about it on here. I think we talked about it a few times that this was going to happen at one point. I know Chris Ballard pretty much said during the owners' meetings that, like, yeah, listen, we're taking care of our guy. They had no interest in letting him get to the open market. Lots of reasons why you got into just beyond the production, I would say. Lots of reasons why beyond the production, but you got into it in your story today. But let's talk about the DeForest Buckner contract extension and what it means for the Colts going forward.
Yeah, it's a huge deal, obviously, because he is one of their pillars in the locker room, pillar on the field, overall great human being from all accounts, from what I understand. And so this was more of a formality than it was like breaking news. I know this was a topic that was brought up by you, actually. We were talking about our 10-step offseason plan. It's like, you know, what are you thinking? And I'm like, well, I think looking back at that piece that we did, it was pretty spot on. I said they had to extend Zaire, which they did earlier than obviously DeForest Buckner, but they extended DeForest Buckner as well. And it just makes sense. He's a really, really good player. I think he's underrated because of some of the team woes over the years since he's been with the Colts. They haven't had like a really good or deep playoff run. Only had one playoff appearance, which was his first year in Indianapolis. But he is one of the best players overall in the NFL. Super consistent, super durable. One of the craziest stats that I have from just looking at his career and putting this story out, out of the 135 possible games he could have played in, 131 regular season, 4 in the postseason, he's only missed 2 games.
Wow.
In 8 years. And I don't know if some of the listeners remember this, but after the 2022 season, he had worn this huge brace on his elbow all year. And I remember walking out and I was like, hey, man, like, what really happened this year? And I believe at the time he told me he had torn his UCL, which is like the baseball injury, you know, Tommy John. And I asked, I was like, are you going to get like any surgery done? Are you going to get the Tommy John surgery? And he's like, well, nope, I'm not a pitcher. I'll just rehab over the summer. And he's like,
good
I don't
answer.
Want some long, you know, recovery. He said he wanted to go enjoy time with his family and still be mobile. And he treats everything, every injury, every ailment as if it's just this little boo-boo that you put a Band-Aid on when you're like 6. So
he's built like Superman. So maybe he just heals like Superman too.
Oh man. So my nickname for DeForest is God's favorite. And I was talking to Dio Dangbo about this in the locker room last year. I was like, man, that is God's favorite. I was like, he's a great football player, really good character guy. He's tall, he's handsome, he grew up in Hawaii. Like, like, come on, man. Like, he's a defensive lineman with no stomach. He has guts. He has no flab.
He's built like no other defensive tackle. I mean, he is such a rare like model for like, again, you couldn't go into a draft and be like, I want to draft the DeForest Buckner type of defensive tackle. There aren't there. They don't exist. These guys aren't, they don't play his position this way. It's crazy. And you're right. He's a good looking guy, born in Hawaii, good family. Like you're right. It's
God's favorite. I'm telling you, part of me is like, they couldn't win the Super Bowl that year because he would have just had too much. That would have been too good. But in all seriousness, he was arguably the best player in the Super Bowl loss against the Chiefs, would have had a shot at MVP had they won that game. And then he goes to the Colts, and in his, you know, 4 seasons since then, he's been their best and most consistent player year in and year out. Over the last, I believe it is six seasons, there's been three players with at least seven sacks in all six seasons. And that's been DeForest Buckner and Chris Jones, obviously the, you know, star defensive tackle for the Chiefs, huge payday that he got this offseason as well. And then none other than, you know, some guy named Myles Garrett, who jumped over the Colts' offensive line last year and looked like he was also one of God's favorites. So, you know, no-brainer deal, well-deserved. We'll talk to DeForest, I'm sure, soon whenever he's available with, you know, the team workout starting back up. So I'm excited about that. But overall, I think that this is a deal that no one can really be upset about. Like, no one's gonna say this was the wrong deal. The length is just fine, 2 years. The money's just fine. It's $23 million per year, which is basically what he was making before. He was already on a 4-year, $84 million extension, so he's in that same range of salary. I know that there's been some questions already initially from some of our readers, like, hey, would this free up some cap space for them? And I don't anticipate that it would do much for the cap space this year, mainly because the Colts don't usually move money around like that. They usually just stick with the straight up contracts. So I guess the silver lining there is that it's not going to cost you any more with this re-signing in years to come. It's pretty much what they've already had on the books, what they had planned. And again, talking to people around the organization, there was no chance, zero chance, similar to Michael Pittman Jr., of DeForest Buckner actually reaching free agency, because had he reached free agency, he honestly might have cost more. And I guess I'll button it up by saying this, Jim. It's good that the Colts did this now. Obviously, they're trying to win, and you want to reward players that have been very good to you. Chris Ballard's preached about that. But beyond that, we've seen some of these huge defensive tackle deals, and it's not like the price for a guy like DeForest Buckner, even though he's 30 and he's aging, was going to go down. So do it now, because I think that, you know, as you see some of these contracts with future defensive tackles, it's going to just cost you more, and it would have cost them more had he hit free agency. So I had a quote from the story that I put out, and this is one where I'm still like, I don't know exactly what Chris Ballard told you, because I thought for a split second that he would ask out after the 2022 season like Stephon Gilmore, and no one would have blamed him. But he was asked about that this past season, and here's what Buckner said after a game. And he said, I trust Chris Ballard. He brought me here back in 2020, not knowing me personally. And he said he bet a first-round pick on me, and I appreciate him for believing in me and what I can bring to this team. I see what he's building. And so I guess that's probably a decent segue into some of this mock draft news.
Hold on now. This is a podcast that has taken its shots at Chris Ballard. Not shots. I would just say question some of the decisions and wondered aloud about what his plan is. So let me take a brief moment here to say that home run trade. Like, I think there was a lot of questions about trading a top 15 pick for a veteran that you had to pay almost $90 million. Even though at the time Chris Ballard said he slept like a baby, and the only thing he worried about during that time was whether or not John Lynch would accept the trade. Like, he was that convinced about DeForest Buckner, like you said, because of the Super Bowl performance. I think that's what put it over the top. And at the time they were running Matt Eberflus's defense, three technique was such a huge part of that. They needed to get a dude in there, and they got it in DeForest Buckner. So again, I just wanted
high character guy as well, like no issues at all.
All the things that you'd want in a guy. And I just wanted to say, Chris Ballard, A-plus trade, because for a couple reasons. One, again, production on the field, like off the field guy, everything you could have wanted in him, he has been. I honestly think you're right. I'm looking at it. It's like from 2018, it's Pro Bowl, All-Pro, Pro Bowl. Last year, 2022, I should say, he didn't get any accolades, which is silly. If he was on a better team, they would have been fine. And then Pro Bowl last year. So he has been, again, I kind of think if he was on a better team or a team with a little bit more, you know, national standing, he would have been a Pro Bowler every single year and maybe an All-Pro maybe one more time. But he's been everything that you could have wanted, like you had mentioned. And again, I want to give Chris Ballard the credit he deserves for making that trade, because he could have stuck at 13 and drafted Javon Kinlaw, which is what the 49ers did, and that did not work out at well. He could have maybe even tried to trade for Arik Armstead, because that's what the 49ers had to decide, was who are they going to pay, Arik Armstead or DeForest Buckner. They chose Armstead. Buckner ended up being the better player. So, again, wins across the board for Chris Ballard here on this.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth mentioning that, you know, at the time you're giving up a first-round pick for a defensive tackle, you'd be like, what the heck? Like, this is a huge pick. But, I mean, he's paid that back and then some. And like I said, the most intriguing part, or maybe enticing part, especially with Anthony Richardson getting healthy, JT being healthy, coming back, DeForest Buckner truly has not shown any signs of slowing down. And Chris Ballard made the argument last year that he might even be getting a little better, which is subjective. You want to give, you know, some love when you can. But he did have a career high in tackles last year with 81, a career high in passes deflected or passes defensed, as you want to say it properly, with 7.
Hate defense.
I know.
My least favorite thing.
I'm like, it should be deflected.
Every time I see it in your story, and I'm like, I guess I'll just leave it because that's the way the NFL does
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like that or breakups. And it's like, all right, which one? But then he also had, remember that crazy, that weird play that Zaire had against the Jaguars, I believe, where he punched the ball out because one of the players on the Jaguars thought the play was dead.
He punched
the ball out, and then Buckner scoops it up and returns it and stretches for the pylon. Big athletic, you know, 6'7" DeForest Buckner stretching out for the pylon and scores a touchdown last year on a fumble recovery. So again, I think when you look at any GM across the league, if you tell them, hey, if we draft a player, they're going to be as good a player and good a person as DeForest Buckner, they will be, you know, ecstatic about that. Cause he really is, I could say a bunch of great things about the guy. And the last thing I'll say about him, and particularly, again, giving all the credit to Chris Ballard on this, because this was a swing and he hit it. This was a grand slam, you know,
yep.
Home run. But with DeForest, similar to Zaire, and I think those two, in my opinion, are like the probably the team's two best leaders.
For sure.
DeForest will face the music, win, lose, or draw.
Like, yeah,
he's
that's
one
right.
of those guys. He talks, you know, every week, twice or three times a week. Even on days when he's not supposed to or not scheduled to talk, if I have a one-off question or I'm curious about what's going on with, you know, this defensive play, or even if I need a quote on, like, just somebody else on the team, he's never too big to, you know, answer questions, or he's never too frustrated to sort of, you know, be a leader, which I think you kind of see what true leadership looks like when you go through a season like you did in 2022. Where you got to face the music, and then you have to answer questions as to why you stayed. But he said he believes in this team. He's repeated that a lot. I think that Shane Steichen being hired kind of reinvigorated him a little bit. I think Anthony Richardson being there. Remember, he was one of the first guys after they picked Anthony Richardson. I think he tweeted right after. He's like, we just got a dog. So he was one of the first public believers in this guy backing him. And so, again, you look at what this team was able to do last year. They're right there. Obviously, they have to make some significant strides, particularly at the quarterback area when it comes to health, to try to get, you know, where they want to go. But defensively, with that defensive line, one of their best units, it's anchored by one of the best players in the league, and he should be going forward. And it's always funny seeing him on the injury report too. Well, not funny. I don't want to be rude. But when I see it and, like, fans are like, oh, my gosh, is he going to play? I'm one of those guys. I would have to seriously see him on the inactive list right before the game for me to be like, he's not playing. And he could take an entire week off for all I care. He's done it. There's been weeks where he doesn't practice very much. Usually it's probably going to happen again this year. When we get to the middle of the season, there's going to be those built-in rest days. When we get to week 6 or 7, he's not going to practice every day of the week. And I'm going to tweet out, oh, he's not out there. And someone's going to say, oh my gosh, he's not going to play. And then he's going to go out there and, you know, get 3 QB hits, a sack, you know, 1 tackle for loss, and it's all in a day's work. And while he's also being double teamed at an extremely high rate, he's one of the most productive players in the NFL, despite seeing a bunch of, you know, just offensive schemes built to stop him. And he's still that to me kind of proves his greatness, where teams know who you are. You're top of the top of the scouting report every week, and you still produce every single week, whether it's a bionic arm, whether it's, I remember one time in the locker room, he was ripping this huge bandage off his rib cage, like this padded bandage thing. And I can go on and on. I keep saying that, but
yeah,
I like DeForest, man. And I'll plug one more story that I did last summer, actually, Father's Day piece. I did this piece talking to DeForest Buckner about his dad, George. DeForest's father was in a major motorcycle accident when DeForest was 13. spent 6 months in a coma, didn't know whether he was going to live or die. And that changed their family, changed his dad's life forever. It kind of forced DeForest to grow up a little bit faster. But if you don't, if you want to know like where his character comes from, faith, resiliency, perseverance, all those things, read that story. I tweeted it out today. I'll tweet it again for sure. But that kind of gives you the backstory to why he is the way he is and why he is respected the way he is. Because again, you think that, again, I'm making a joke. Oh, he's God's favorite. He's got all these things. No, he's been through some things. Been through some.
Oh, he's earned a lot of, I mean, yeah, like I said, he's exactly. Earned so much. Of that. I'm with you. Huge fan of it. I got to cover him for a couple of years. I was a huge fan of getting to kind of work with him and talk to him. And yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say was like, I mean, it won't get to the mock. I promise you guys. I just wanted to say that, hey, man, he hasn't always had like a lot of help on that defensive line in terms of edge rush and it, you know, some developing players and things like that. But he's been a constant presence and effective every single year, getting to the quarterback and yeah, I mean, like I said, teams have to game plan for him and we'll continue to do so. So, all right, we talked a lot about DeForest Buckner, probably longer than you and I both expected, but I just there's so many nice things to say about him and many reasons why Chris Ballard and the Colts did a good job here on that. So I wanted to make sure we didn't just kind of blow past it. Now, James, you did your mock draft.
Lord, but I was stressing, Jim.
I like hearing, for you guys listening, like, you know, I go on Pro Football Network sometimes, do a mock draft just to mess around, you know, with the Colts or the Bears, the team, you know, I grew up rooting for, and it'll take me 10, 15 minutes. James spent hours.
Yeah, I did.
To make sure he got this right. This wasn't a fly-by-night exercise, people. James was in it.
To be fair, I don't even think that I got it right. I just think that I took it seriously. That's the hard part. Like, it's honestly fun to just play with it. And it's like, oh my gosh, they got this player and that player. But like, explaining the picks, looking at the roster construction, second guessing yourself. I don't know how people do this for a living. Like, I would be the most miserable GM because at some point, I want this to be over. I want it to be done. I don't want to accept any trades because I don't want any more decisions to have to make. But I thought it was fairly realistic. I tried to keep it somewhat fun. I didn't want to just go through it and be like, because for those who don't know, when you go on Pro Football Network and you do the mock drafts, there will be trade opportunities presented to you. I could have declined every single one and just picked seven guys, but it's like, that's not a realistic draft for anybody. And especially not the Colts who usually trade back. And I figured I would have some fun with it. So I believe there were like two or three trades. I want to say three overall in my mock draft. And yeah, it was a lot.
Well, let me start with the first pick comes up. You're at 15. You get an offer from the Rams to move back, which you end up taking. We're not spoiling anything. I'll give people the terms. You did 19 and 52. You got, I should say, from the Rams for 15 and 100. What pick? 116. So, yeah, moved up into the second round with that one, and also just had to move back four spots. So, pretty good deal for the Colts. Definitely feels like a Chris Ballard type move. Here, but we'll talk about who you picked, Cooper DeJean, in a little bit. But I want to go over the trade first because what was really interesting about this was that you mentioned that Brock Bowers was already taken.
Right.
Keaton Mitchell was already taken. However, two of your favorites, I believe, through this process, Kerryon Arnold and Brian Thomas were both there. And I kept wondering when I read it, if only one of them was there, would you have just taken them? But with two there, you were thinking, I can move back. I'll be good. I'll get one of them at 19. Was that what you were thinking in that moment?
Yeah, that was part of my thinking. I was like, man, really, I was thinking, I figured Kerryon Arnold would be gone. And realistically, I don't see a scenario where he's probably sticking past the 15th pick.
He's the cornerback from Alabama. We should go over these guys as we go. Cornerback from Alabama. He's the number one corner on Dane Brugler's big board. And Brian Thomas, the one we're talking about, is the wide receiver from LSU. The number two wide receiver behind Malik Nabers. So,
right.
At LSU.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So, and number two meaning number two at that university, not overall. Obviously,
yeah, fourth on Brugler's big board as a receiver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure that clear for any Colts fans. Say, hey, what is this Harrison Jr. erasure?
But so you didn't believe Kerryon Arnold would be there realistically in the draft?
No, I didn't think so. But I also was like, again, when you're looking at scheme fit, Cooper DeJean's also a really athletic player, really good player. He fits your defensive principles. And would it be more of a bang for your buck type of move? Now, I will say, like you said, I thought, you know, there's a good chance one of them will be there. And for the mock draft people out there, I didn't restart this and be like, oh, nope, I'm going to start over. I took it seriously because that's a real gamble that you take. And so when I saw that Brian Thomas Jr. went one pick earlier to the Bengals, I believe, I was crushed. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is like that was the guy I wanted. That's what I needed. It would have been perfect. So in that same vein, I ended up actually trading back again from 19 to 21. This one was with Miami. I don't think this is all that realistic, but I was like, you know what? That's the other thing. I didn't want to waste so much time trying to figure out what other teams might think is realistic.
I'm thinking last year that the Giants traded up one spot, I think, to try to get their guy. I mean, that move up, small move up, especially in the middle of the back end of the draft, do happen. So
I meant the compensation. Like, It says that, you know, I traded the 21st pick. Or the 19th pick for the 21st pick from Miami and their 2025 second round pick.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know if they're
getting
up a second round pick to move up two spots in like the back end of the first round. But also, again, with these mock drafts, I went through a couple of different versions and made probably three different versions, but I was like, okay, what's the most realistic one? Because they all have ridiculous trades or players that drop for no reason. There was even one where, you know, I think Caleb Williams might be the third pick off the board. I'm like, I'm not doing this because that's just not realistic. And so I went with this one. I was like, hey, it's kind of fun, whatever. And then I do think if someone offers you, I get it, it's not the same year, which makes it a little bit less enticing, but second round pick to move back two spots. And when you're still in the Anthony Richardson rookie window thing, I was like, that kind of makes sense.
Oh, it's a no-brainer. I think the value. Probably real life, you only get like a 3 or a 4 at that spot. But
that's what I'm
again,
saying.
Even collecting picks for next year makes sense. The thought process makes sense and only moving back two spots. So let's get into Cooper DeJean a little bit. You know, listen, I haven't covered Chris Ballard before. The first thing I looked at when I saw you picked Cooper DeJean was to say, hey, does he have the requisite arm length, which is typically in the 31 to 32-inch arms. He's a little short, so I will say, I'm sorry, he's 31 and 1/8, so he's like right around it. But I think what you're right, again, Ballard does make exceptions occasionally for these kinds of guys, so don't get me wrong. He will do that. And again, for a guy who has the versatility and the athleticism Cooper DeJean has, I definitely understood it. Do you think, my question was this, do you think Gus Bradley would use him in the ways, would be very creative with him in terms of moving him in and out of the slot, moving him to safety, moving him to corner, doing outside corner, because he can do all of it. And I'm wondering if Gus Bradley's defense is the right place for him to land in terms of, you know, taking advantage of some of that creativity.
Right. That's where I went back and forth. And that's why I think actually, like personally, I think that the number one cornerback is Quinyon Mitchell. I like his physicality, his athleticism. He's also a Senior Bowl guy, team captain. So he seems like a Ballard guy. So if he's there, I'll probably pick him with that 15th pick. But with Tyrion and Cooper, it was similar things where like their versatility kind of sets them apart. And I'm not sure how creative Gus Bradley would be. I just know that he plays a lot of zone defense.
He does. Yeah.
And so when you look at Cooper's strengths, a lot of them are with zone, reading and reacting, being in the right spot, being a thinker. And he is pretty athletically gifted. I mean, this is a guy who he didn't just play a couple different sports in high school. He was a star in all of them.
He's a Bruce Feldman Freaks List guy too.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got all of the physical traits except for like the arm length, like you said, but ran a 4.4, you know, has a 38.5-inch vertical. So I went back and forth. Like,
it's not short arms, by the way. They're just not like super long like Ballard tends to
I think one of those guys, just looking at him on the regular, Kenny Moore, again, not a height-wise, not a Ballard guy, but obviously a Ballard guy now because he plays well. But he has super, super long arms. Like, Kenny has some long arms. It's actually noticeable when you look at him. He's just standing there. Not the same with Cooper. But, again, I felt like this was a realistic trade-back sort of safe pick. Like, I don't think that Cooper DeJean has a lot of bust qualities, if that makes sense.
I agree.
It's not a boomer bust pick to me. Like, his floor, his ceiling might be not as high as other players, but his floor should be pretty high. So that was my pick, the first pick in this Colts mock draft. And this is what Brugler said about him. He said DeJean is one of the best tackling defensive backs in the class. So his playmaking skills and coverage. And he also mentioned that he has, you know, some value as a return man and a gunner. So I thought that that was also another thing, like, is he someone that you could use in special teams? Again, given these new rules too, like, is he valuable? Another body you could throw out there. So, that was one of the guys that I picked. And then I went back, Jim, and put in the other, like the other players that are still available. Cause I was like, that's probably worth mentioning to the casual reader. Cause they don't know what my mock draft looked like. So the other players that are available, which I thought was, well, could have been Colts picks in real life. Nate Wiggins, cornerback from Clemson, who is blazing fast, super light though, only weighing in 173 pounds, I think, at the NFL Combine. We had Penn State edge Chop Robinson, great nickname for an edge rusher. You know, he's another player that's more like upside than production that he had in college. I don't think that he was the most productive player in college, but he definitely showed flashes. And then Xavier Worthy from Texas. I know Shane Steichen, Reggie Wayne were down there at the Texas Pro Day to get a look at him, and ideally probably A.D. Mitchell as well, another Texas wide receiver. But Xavier Worthy, for those who are not as familiar, was the wide receiver who broke the 40-yard dash record at the NFL Scouting Combine, running a 4.21. I'll add that he is an underrated route runner. He's got more to his bag than just running deep. And those are the players that are still available. And I think, again, you could go – there's probably – realistically to me at the 15 spot, Jim, there's probably 10 players.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That I could be like, all right, I could be talked into. There's probably like six where I'm like, hey, I'm with you. And again, this was based off of Brock Bowers and Quinyon Mitchell being gone already. So I just a reminder.
I mean, given the guys that you had left, I like this pick a lot. I don't think Nate Wiggins is necessarily a great Colts fit, given how light he is. And I think Ballard wants his corners to be able to tackle a little better than Nate Wiggins, maybe. And again, a guy as small as that in the NFL might be a little bit tough. Maybe I'm having Emmanuel Forbes flashbacks. He struggled in Washington last year. He's not as small as Emmanuel Forbes. But no, I really like DeJean, too, because the Colts might have needed safety at one point. Maybe they want to slide him back. It almost fits like a puzzle piece that he can fit anywhere you want. Like, ideally, you'd start him out of the outside corner, and if he flourishes there, great. But he also can, you know, if Kenny's out, maybe you can move him in the slot for a minute, or you need help at safety for a couple of games, you can move him out there. And he's kind of one of those Swiss Army knives that can play anywhere. Again, when you're picking somebody in the top 20, I know you're 21 here, but top 20, you probably want position, you know, premium position, and that's outside corner. So ideally, that's where you're taking him for. But I do like the idea of, hey, Dallas Flowers took off along with Juju Brents. Maybe we can slide him in the slot, or maybe we move him to safety. Or again, you can kind of plug him in wherever you need him to be useful. So I really do like the pick. He kind of fits that Swiss Army knife mold. And again, I'm not sure Gus Bradley would use him intentionally like that. But I do think that in terms of injuries or whatever might happen, he's got that versatility that you can use him anywhere.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say about him is, or really just this pick in general, I'm leaning more towards defense than offense. Unless they're even Brock Bowers, I was having a hard time thinking, just in theory, who would I pick, Brock Bowers or Quinyon Mitchell? Like, I don't think that's like an easy choice as far as like big boards go. Big board wise, I think Brock Bowers is probably rated higher than Quinyon Mitchell on all of them. But for your team needs, I think they should pick a cornerback. I just think that they should. I think that they should take a swing on a cornerback, whether it's Cooper DeJean, Tyrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, who again is my probably number one cornerback. I think they should take one over like a Brian Thomas or, Brock Bowers. So we'll see. Like, again, that's the beauty of it. I've already got some reactions, both good and bad. And it's like, hey, I took my chance at it, and it is what it is. So we can move on to the second round. This was not a traded pick. This was one of the Colts' original picks, number 46 in the second round. Jim, I went with Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, and this is mainly because Dane Brugler said he gives off DK Metcalf vibes.
Yeah, you went big fast. Big Fast is a good choice when you're drafting for Chris Ballard, because Chris Ballard loves him some Big Fast.
And his RAS, relative athletic score, was a 9.88. I believe Cooper's is like a 9.9 something, or it's relatively close. Even if it's not a 9.9, it's like a 9.8. It's like the highest among all cornerbacks this year. So keep that in mind as well as we go through this. Like, the RAS scores, they're not like sole indicators, but they usually do indicate what the Colts are willing to take a chance on. And so, Big, Fast, strong guy. Again, DK Metcalf comparison. I think that he could be good. Got big playability, a lot of big play after the catch, a lot of yak. What do you think?
I like it. I kind of think I'm reimagining the Eagles offense under Shane Steichen and kind of plugging him into the A.J. Brown role with Michael Pittman kind of playing the Devonta Smith role and liking that a little bit. Again, they're not apples, you know, one for one comparisons on either one of those, by the way, but just kind of liking the offense the way that looks. Obviously, Richardson playing the Jalen Hurts role of that. I I'm kind of seeing it all come together and Shane Steichen being able to get the best out of all those guys in that way. I'm such a fan of the way Shane Steichen coaches offense that I kind of believe almost anybody you take, he's going to figure out the best way to use them. And when you find a guy that is this strong and this fast and can kind of make plays after the catch, I just kind of like the fit. I like that you got a guy. I like receiver a lot better in the second round for the Colts, to be honest with you. I'm kind of with you. You could maybe talk me into Brock Bowers at 15. I think that's value probably at that point. And again, if one of the big three receivers falls for some ridiculous reason, then okay. But I really like Brian Thomas, so I'm not trying to knock him, but I like going defense first, addressing the hole that you have there. You still have Alec Pierce as your three. Again, this is me assuming Josh Downs is your two out of the slot, who I really like. But you add some really interesting talent here in Xavier Legette. And he fits what the Colts need. He fits what the Colts do. He fits what Chris Ballard loves in his wide receivers, typically. So, I have no complaints. I'm looking at the other guys you passed up. Roman Wilson, to me, fits as more of a slot player. So, I think that's redundant from what you had Josh Downs.
Yeah, that's why I passed on him.
Edge Cooper, the linebacker. I think he's...
really good player, but yeah, also not someone I would take in the second round. Yeah.
I don't like taking linebackers with day one and day two picks typically. Day two's okay. I don't mind it as much. And then Darius Robinson. Here's the thing. I don't love the edge class in general. I think the Colts could use an upgraded edge, but I think when they were shopping for Danielle Hunter, that's more what I was talking about. I think what they have on the team already is pretty, you know, I don't think anybody they're going to get in this draft is going to maybe unseat the guys they already have coming off the edge. Not to say they couldn't develop long-term. I'm just not a huge fan of the class. So
yeah, I think for me, It would have to be like a Dallas Turner. You pick him first.
And again, at 15, I'm not sure I see Dallas Turner as like a top 10 pick, but at 15, again, I'm fine with it. I'm good. But like, I don't know. I don't think he gets the 15, and therefore I think he did the right thing at corner, at least the way I see it. And yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the other guys that you could have had. I'm not complaining. We can move on to the other second round pick that you got, because I'm not a big edge guy. So what did you see out of Adisa Isaac that you really liked?
I think a lot of it had to come down to his physical traits. I was like, all right, this is a guy who's he's big, he's bendy, he's fast. All of these things are usually things you want to hear about edge rushers. And since you're not taking, like I said, Alabama's Dallas Turner, or you're not taking a Jared Verse from Florida State, this is one of those picks where I was like, do you just take a trait swing and try to see if you can find a little bit of a diamond in the rough? I know it wouldn't be like a complete diamond in the rough because it is a second round pick, but having already addressed what I believe are bigger needs with adding a wide receiver, adding a cornerback, do you go through this and say, okay, now we take another chance on this edge pick? And I believe his name is Adisa or Adisa.
Let me check. Dane Berger. Yeah, yes. He's got his
the phonetic spelling.
Yes. Let me look real quick. Adisa.
Adisa. Which exactly. So you know, I figured he would be someone who could be more than maybe what he showed in college. Now, that's every player. You always want to draft guys for upside, but someone who could come in, be sort of a backup, and potentially, unseat one of the other defensive ends ahead of him. But also, this speaks to a larger point that we've talked about already, and I'm sure all of us on the Colts will be monitoring. How much do you believe in Kwity Paye? We'll find out when the fifth-year option deadline comes May 2nd for first-round picks in the 2021 draft class.
Coming up fast. Coming up soon.
They have to make a decision on him. I've asked about it. I haven't got a clear answer about this from anyone. So that, to me, is also a we don't necessarily think that Kwity Paye is the answer here. So we'll take another swing and see if we can find someone. But as you alluded to, there's not really some pathway for a first-year guy, first-year edge rusher, in my opinion, to come in and just start right away on this Colts team. Because, they, you know, while I said I've kind of criticized their edge rushers for not being elite. I mean, who doesn't want an elite edge rusher? They've been pretty good. And last year they were solid. Like, they're not – I actually think the defensive line is probably one of the strongest units of this team. But I went with him. You know, Brugler was saying that, you know, he does need to mature, develop some more moves in his repertoire. But this is a quote, length, energy, athletic tools, you know, those are the things that can be help him become an impactful edge presence in the NFL. So do I like love this pick? Maybe not. But looking at other picks that were available, yeah, Washington edge, Braylon Trice, Mizzou cornerback, Ennis, Rake Straw Jr., and then Washington safety, Jaden Hicks. I could see the team picking a safety at this point in the draft. Maybe if you're not sold on, you know, the back end and what you have next to Julian Blackman. But this is what one of the things where I'm like, I'm hesitant. I wouldn't be surprised if they picked a safety, but they picked one last year, Daniel Scott, who towards ACL, hadn't played. And also, at some point, I'm like, when do you figure out what you're doing with Nick Cross? Is he going to play or not? You traded up for him. You thought he's going to be like a first-round pick potential guy. You basically said when we traded up for this guy, we thought we were going to first-round pick a year early. If you draft a safety, does that mean you just don't believe in this guy at all? Is he ever going to play? I mean, if there's going to be a season to let him play, it's probably this one. He's been in your system. He's still young. He knows what you expect of him. I mean, what? Is it Rodney Thomas? I don't think Rodney Thomas probably is a long-term answer after he regressed last year. So, again, this is where I fight myself in the mock draft, Jim, and it takes me hours to make a pick.
I get it. You know, again, I could poke holes in Isaac a little bit, but again, you're talking about mid-second round. You're 50 picks in. Like, I think there's going to be holes in all of these guys. I don't ever hate drafting premium position like edge. I said I don't love the class in terms of top-end talent. But I do think that if you're going to bolster the edge, that's always something that you should be looking into. And if you turn into you find a guy that's a 7 to 10 sack guy in the second round, that's a win. That's a big win. And you have him for 4 years and a cheap deal. So if that's what Adisa Isaac can become for you, I'm fine with it. I like the idea of adding to the depth, especially like you mentioned, Kwity Paye, Dayo Odangbo, and I believe Samson Ebukam are all playing on expiring deals this year. So you might need to add some talent to that group if you don't bring those guys back. So I like him. He's a little small, I guess, is one issue I have with him. I don't.
But also looking at some of the other edge, like they've hit, like they got some short, not short, but like they got some smaller edges in this draft. I was looking at a lot of these guys. I'm like, not like
they're
even
more
Dallas
up
Turner.
Rushers.
Yeah, yeah, even Dallas Turner is like a bit undersized.
It's not perfect, but again, maybe Isaac can put on a little bit of weight and fit this scheme a little better. And again, if you can get some explosion off the edge, the speed, athleticism that he brings, like that's you take a shot on it. I mean, we've seen Chris Ballard take shots on it before on these edge guys, the second, third rounds throughout his tenure here in Indianapolis. So again, you're putting on your Chris Ballard hat. This makes a ton of sense, this type of pick. And you did mention the safety. So that kind of transitions us next into your third round pick, which you made a trade back four spots in order to move up from 150 to 127. That was kind of the benefit there. You move back from 82 to 86 with the Texans. Ah, people get mad about division trades, but no one really cares when it's third round. That's what I would say. So what you talked about, you drafted Braden Fiske, and make sure I got to have to look Fiske or Fisk. I'd have to look that up here at this point. Defensive tackle, but you did pass on Tyler Newbin, who is a safety that I thought people really liked out of Minnesota. I wanted to continue that conversation just a little bit. I am interested in why. Yeah, Nick, the Nick Cross thing is a perfect. again, if you're not going to let him play, are you just calling that a bust pick? What's going on there?
Yeah, that was a little bit of my thinking in this, but also this was, and someone pointed out in my article, I was like, this was if the Colts like lose their minds and don't actually keep DeForest Buckner, do you take a DeForest? Do you take a defensive tackle to make sure that you're not like, you don't have anybody like under or a guy who could possibly step in and be a starter in the future? So I was part of it. Obviously, I knew DeForest Buckner wouldn't be going anywhere, but I thought it would be somewhat interesting to think, okay, do you, in the situation, if you're still trying to figure out his contract, now again, I made this mock draft before all the DeForest news came out, do you make this decision with the idea of him not being here long term? And then also, to piggyback off of that, how much do you weigh, like, this is where it's always hard for me, it's like, do you weigh positional value versus like just best player upside? Like,
yeah, I think once you get and especially even in like day two, I think you try to target need a little bit. But I kind of think as you get further into day two, you're especially like, I mean, you're toward the end of the third round here, or at least the middle of the third round.
Exactly. But I'll add though that I think that if someone said, oh, like I, you know, don't like this pick, I would have picked the safety Tyler Newbin, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think that he would have been a good pick as well. And I understand also adding another three tech, it probably isn't the most realistic thing, but I was kind of looking, okay, who's someone who, if they hit, they could really be a difference maker. And he seems like one that could be that, which is always the theory with a lot of these different players. But this is where it gets, again, going through the mock draft, looking at team needs, it gets not, I guess fuzzier is a good word, because I linked back to last year, players they picked, you know, players they might want to try to get another shot at this year coming up. How much do you value the guys that you already have on your roster versus the ones you don't? This was just a shot in the dark, and I was like, maybe he is someone who's athletic enough for you to just take a swing on to be your future guy or one of your guys. And then also, overall, I'm always thinking depth of the defensive line. Depth, depth, depth. And he's big enough. I know Aditamuwa Adebare got drafted last year. He's a bit undersized, showed some flashes. But, this is a guy who can't hide anywhere. He's a pretty big dude.
I like the pick because for a couple of reasons. Is one, like you said, you can't have enough depth on the defensive line. We saw that last year when Grover Stewart left. And not to say this guy is going to be the space heater run stopper that Grover Stewart is going to be. By the way, Fisk, not Fisky. I messed that up. I apologize. We saw what happened. The Colts' run defense kind of went to hell once Grover Stewart was out. They didn't really have anybody to fill in. This is, again, he's not Grover Stewart matchup, but I am saying bolstering the defensive line in general is a great way to avoid having that happen if you do lose a guy like Buckner, for who doesn't miss time. But if he does miss time, or, you know, again, like this, if you lose defensive line depth, this is always a good place to have it. So I don't mind the pick. Like I said, I probably would have gone safety at this spot, but I hear you on the, we got to see what we got in some of these young guys on the team still. So
if they tell me they'll play Nick Cross, I'll be free of this, but I'm like, I don't know what you're doing with them. And I have to imagine at some point before you, cause I look at it like this, Jim, at some point you have to either decide he's going to play or it's you had a bust pick. And I get it. You know, he's going into his third year now. But you got to figure out what you're going to do, because he was such a high draft pick. You were super high on him. All these expectations. He actually started. Remember, he started his rookie year, and quickly they figured out he was kind of in over his head.
He's super young. That's the only thing that he's got going for him still. He's still very, very young. He's 22 years old. Yeah, he'll be younger than a lot of the guys picked this year. Actually, in fact, I think he's probably, I mean, look, but I think Newbin is the same age. I could be wrong, but
he probably is.
I'm trying to remember. I don't have these memorized like a, he's almost 23 actually. So, and so is Nick Cross. So they're almost the same age. And it's kind of wild to think about that, but that's where things are with Nick Cross. So, all right, let's move on real quick, cause we're probably bun up on time.
Yeah. I want to kind of
blend. Well, I'm going to blend two of them together. Your fourth round pick, Texas A&M guard, Laden Robinson, and your seventh round pick, Wyoming tackle, Frank Crum. Again, I'm not saying they're comparable players. I am saying, they're both offensive linemen. I think the Colts have some older offensive linemen. It's not necessarily been paid attention to. Some of these guys are on expiring contracts as well. But, you know, Brian Kelly's getting up there. Braden Smith is coming to the end of his deal pretty soon. I'm missing somebody. I think Will Fries is coming to the end of his contract pretty soon. Pinter. So, yeah, I mean, all these guys, that they kind of need to find some depth. So was that kind of your thinking?
Give me somebody big and athletic. And Layton Robinson is more polished, obviously, than Frank Crum, who, you know, just seventh round pick. Pick a big athletic guy. Maybe it works out. If it doesn't, you know, no big deal. But I picked Layton Robinson thinking that he could be a rotational or a good contingency plan for the season. He also plays on the right side, I believe. So, you know, looking at Will Fries, is he somebody that could back him up if, you know, push comes to shove? But again, you want that, just that versatility. You want that ability to kind of help in case you get in the jam. You never want to be too beholden to the guys you have, because as we saw last year, even though they had a really good offensive line season, they bounced back. I don't think they had the offensive line, their complete starting offensive line, for like 90% of the season. There was always somebody kind of banged up or out. Braden Smith missed time. Ryan Kelly missed some time. So you want to be able to have some flexibility. So those are my two picks there. And then I just can't imagine the Colts going through a draft without getting some offensive linemen on day three, because who wouldn't? You always want to add those guys, even if it's just for camp competition. I think that's a good thing. And I pass on a few other guys. I know Kyrie Jackson's a guy I've been getting a lot of messages about. And I pass on him because he's an older cornerback. He's super athletic. He's like 6'4", pretty good speed, length, all these things. But he's like 24. He had a unique path to the NFL. I'm like, I don't know if the Colts take a swing on a 24-year-old cornerback. I just don't see that happening. And then to round it out, you know, my sixth-round pick was Tip Reinemann from Illinois, who actually,
Homer.
I want to say,
you're Homer.
Yeah. and you know what's crazy? I believe I might have had some brief overlap with him when I was covering Illinois Athletics a few years ago. But and he was not this. He was not even a draft pick that back then. He was somebody that was, you know, former walk-on, low-level roster guy, but worked his way up to being a pretty good player. And I picked him in this mock because he's super athletic, 9.92 RAS score. Very physical guy, had some big playability actually with his hands. I believe he averaged about 19 yards per catch or something like that. Not a lot of catches though. And Mo Alie-Cox is entering the final year of his contract. I get it. It's a crowded tight end room, but Mo Alie-Cox is not going to be here long-term. I don't think they're going to give him an extension. So, you know, is it worth it to just take a swing on a guy who could compete in camp and might be able to, you know, beat somebody out for a spot, or maybe stash him on your practice squad or something like that. But that's why I picked him. And he's also massive, 6'4", 271, is a pretty big tight end. So I think that he could have a chance to, you know, have an impact. And again, you also don't know how your entire tight end room is going to shake out because of Jelani Woods coming back from injury. You also have Drew Ogletree, who's still on the commission, is exemplars. Will he be a member of the team this upcoming season? We don't know that. Will Mallory show some promise? Colin Granson's still there. So it's a crowded room, but not one that I can say, here's definitively who's going to be like on the 53-man roster right now today and who's going to start for them. I think that Mo Alie-Cox is probably their starter right now, but, you know, we'll see how camp goes. But, yeah, that was again, late round pick. Give me an athletic guy, someone who might be able to have to fill a team need. And I could see him really, I could honestly really see him being a realistic pick for the Colts this late in the draft.
I agree. I mean, like I said, I think you did everything that Chris Ballard would have done, which is, again, look for a big, strong, fast, which is what you found in some of these RAS score guys. That's what he does, especially at tight end. We've seen that time and time again with his draft picks. They could use another injection of athleticism and youth into that room. I think it makes total sense. I'm not gonna linger too much on these picks, frankly, because they're day three picks. Could be anybody, but I think your reasoning is what we are here for, and I think that makes a lot of sense. So let me ask you before we get out of here, because we're running a little late. Any regrets? What was your any? Or I guess we'll say one regret and your favorite pick, and then we'll let us everybody get
out
of here.
Yes, my regret would be thinking that one of the two, Tyrion Arnold or Brian Thomas Jr., would be there after trading back again in the first round or trading back initially in the first round. So missed that on Brian Thomas, which that stuck. That really, you know, hurt. And then as far as favorite pick goes, I think Xavier Liggett is probably my favorite pick. I think that, you know, this is a very deep wide receiver class. Chris Ballard said that himself. So I think that you can, ideally, I would like to see the Colts go cornerback round one, wide receiver round two, because I think you can get a better cornerback like in round one than you can get in round two versus the same scenario with the wide receiver. Like, obviously you get a better player in round one, but I think that you can get more bang for your buck, so to speak, if you pick a wide receiver in round two. And I still think they have some guys in that round two range with star potential. Especially just keeping in mind that they wouldn't have to come in and be the number one, number two right away. They could be the number three guy, kind of work their way up. And I just trust that Shane Steichen can make it work if you give him a guy with the right tools. And Liggett is a guy who seems like someone who can, you know, make it happen. Again, big playability, add some stuff as far as kickoff returns and things like that. So we'll see. But I'll say this. If I'm wrong on my picks, I was hacked, you know. And if I'm right on, you know, a few of these picks, you know, I'm a genius. There you go.
Couple of things before we get out of here. I just want to say, go read the story. James did a really good job explaining all his reasoning. I know he did here as well, but you can go check it out. He's going to have another mock draft next week. He's also going to have an NFL draft themed mailbag. So if you have questions for James, send them in. I'll get that posted on the Athletic website. So where you can find that should be tomorrow-ish. And by that being Tuesday, depending on when you're listening to this, it should be up by then. But until then, keep reading The Athletic. Go read The Beast. It's incredible. Yeah, anything you want to know about any of these prospects, it's all there. Dan Brugler is the man. But until then, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.